This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
But then after the race, he invited everybody to his trailer for beers.
This is The Thing About Cars, recording as usual from strongboxwest.com. Please check them out. It's a very cool facility. With me today is
Katie
and
Ben.
And we're just going to talk about The Thing About Cars as usual. And where should we start?
I don't know. Where do you guys want to start?
Well, I was trying to think of what's happening in the world of cars recently. I can't remember what I read about electric cars. Tesla's doing something.
They're always doing something.
They're always doing something. A friend of mine actually stood in line to buy the next model Tesla, and it will be delivered sometime next year, obviously.
Wow.
How long did she wait?
I don't know. I should ask her.
That's the Model 3, right?
I think that's correct.
Which is really pretty inaccurately named. You know, Tesla is kind of the Hitchhiker's Guide of cars. Yeah, because Hitchhiker's Guide had a trilogy that wound up being something like 5 books.
Right.
The Model 3 is Tesla's 4th car.
Right. But yeah, I keep seeing the other ones on the road. I'm seeing more and more Teslas these days.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Saw one on the way down here tonight.
Right. Well, if we ever have our wildest dreams come true and we find a couple sponsorships and can really get out and play with cars, maybe one of us can afford a Tesla.
That'd be cool.
Awesome.
All right. Cool. But yeah, beyond that, I can't remember what else it was that I was going to bring up today. But
I did read something earlier about what Volkswagen's doing to their Jettas, all the Jettas that they're repurchased, and that they're basically, the only thing that they're doing is just crushing the computer, the ECU, and then just reselling engine the parts and the engines, and I'm just like, okay. They're not completely crushing them, but...
So they're not destroying the whole car.
No, until they can figure out, I think they have, from what I read, until March next year to figure out how to kind of fix the emissions part. So then they just have somebody bring their car in instead of having to completely repurchase it.
It surprises me that they don't just replace the computer.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm not a pro. I'm not very knowledgeable in all these things, but it's like you misprogrammed a computer. Can't you just give it a brand new program and life is fine? But maybe
you'd think.
Maybe I mean,
unless you're in the thick of what's going on in Volkswagen, you can't really know all the details.
So they're keeping the car.
Yeah.
They're going to keep the car, just take the computer, destroy it, and then just sell the rest for parts?
Yeah. I guess that's how they're going to make their money back.
Yeah. There are a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if, also what I read, if they don't rebuy or repurchase 80% of them, they have an even more bigger fine. And which I'm just like, sometimes that's not their fault, but hopefully that doesn't happen to them, because, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Volkswagens, but, I mean, I like the older ones, like the Beetles and the Vans and stuff, but, like, the newer ones, they're decent. I mean, again, I'm a classics person.
Yeah.
I love classics. I prefer classics. So,
of the modern cars, what are your favorites?
The modern cars, Vipers and the C7 Corvettes.
How about for a daily driver?
A daily driver? I actually don't know. I've never thought about, like, a regular, everyday car type of thing. Just probably what I would get if I did have to choose a car is some sort of Honda, really. I mean, just because they're a part, if anything breaks down, it's cheap, and they're more reliable.
Sure.
Because, and also, if I want to add something to it or make it more powerful, it's a lot. There's a lot of stuff that you can do that.
There's a huge market for that.
So.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like to ask the question, especially from people who work in the automotive industry, and you still get a variety of responses. Like, I've met a number of mechanics recently who said that there's a reason why they drive Hyundais. And I'm like, well, okay, interesting. And then I meet others who, you know, like the Hondas, and I meet others who like, you know, I don't know, Mazdas. So there's still not a great consensus even amongst the automotive technological world that one car is better than the other.
Well, I think that's good too, because then if there are a lot of them that are good, you know, that, hey, better for everybody.
Right. Right, exactly. So you were saying you like classics.
Yes, so I love classics.
What is your dream car?
My dream car is any C3 Corvette. Preferably the older ones, but if like a 68 to 72 is fine, but like I like the older ones because the body work is more dramatic and have more curves, and that's just my favorite. And I want it Corvette blue. blue that originally was on it, and that it's just my dream car.
Very cool.
What does Ed Craig years mean?
Well, 68 to 72, in the C3, there were a couple of, you know, sub-generations. 68 to 72 are easily identifiable because they've got a chrome metal bumper,
yeah,
and then the little vent right behind the front wheel on the side, people refer to as an egg crate because it's, you know, it's a little metal grid.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see. I didn't know what was
And then for 73, they went to an integrated bumper, right, and lost the egg crate.
I did not know they called it that.
The only reason why I said Vipers as a newer car is because they're not considered classics yet.
Right.
So, because once that reaches there, then Viper.
So how much of a classic car scene is there in and around Atlanta, and how much of it do you get to go play in?
Actually, there's a little bit of a scene. I mean, mostly where around where I live, it's more like souped-up trucks or souped-up Hondas and souped-up... The best one that I've seen was a souped-up El Camino. And, like, he... It's a customer that comes in all the time, and he's been working on this El Camino since I basically started there. And he finally brought it in one day, and I was just... And he's trying to make it into a race El Camino, a race car. And I'm just like, well, that's new. I've never seen that before, but... but where normally it's, again, it's not really that big in the classic scene. Normally where my uncle lives, it's more of a classic scene, and that's because my uncle's into the classics and he's more around that sort of thing. But
now, you said he's not local.
No.
Where is he?
He lives in Des Moines, Iowa.
Ah, okay.
Oh yeah.
Well, we'll have to see if he can Skype in someday, and that would be. But there are plenty of car clubs around Atlanta that I think.
Yeah, there are. I haven't had a chance to, like, go out and try and find these clubs because I'm school and work and all that.
There's something for every taste out there.
I think so, and especially Atlanta. Atlanta tends to be sort of an old car crowd.
Yeah.
And you know, there's still a lot of moonshiner history around Atlanta and, you know, old muscle cars, and there's a huge Southern, I want to say Southern ethic with the way that some of the older classic cars get preserved around here, but one of the things we're going to do, Ben and I talked about this last time, was we have a little handheld recorder that we're going to start taking to car shows, and if we can get another one of those, I would think it would be fun if all of us podcasters here, because we've got you, me, Ben, Becca number two. I'm not going to say who is who because they'll both get mad at me. Katrina and possibly a few other folks that I think are team for this podcast. I would think it'd be cool if all of us just descended on a car show and just had fun with it that day and see what kind of content we came back with.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, in where my uncle lives, there's this place called American Dream Machine. And it's all classic cars and all that. And normally whenever I go up there is during whenever they have... the farmer's market, and it's, like, right around that same area, and so they would always have their doors open and have, like, all these different types of cars. Though I do want to say, because where I work is right across the street from, literally right across the street from a place called Air D Motorsports, and normally they normally don't really work on classics, but they also have classics. Like, right now they're working on an old Beetle. And before they worked on a DeLorean and all this other stuff, and which is more over there is where, like, I see most of the classics that are around. But that's because they work on them. So
what do they typically do?
They just typically do racing, like try to soup up cars, like, because they are the people that did the Viper that went 217 miles an hour at on the 1/2 mile, and by Wanna Go Fast Company, and so they're the people that made that. And
you know any of those guys?
Who?
AID?
I'm actually apprenticing for some of them.
Cool.
One of the guys.
Oh, excellent.
So
maybe we can talk to them someday.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
If they're really busy, though.
Sure. Well,
Now, here's a classic car irony for you. I read recently that Chrysler are closing their corporate museum with all their old Chryslers in it. They're turning it into office space. Now, the irony here is I'm aware that in Fort Wayne, I believe it's Fort Wayne, Indiana, there is an Auburn Cord Duesenberg Museum. Now, the Auburn Cord Duesenberg Group have been out of business since before World War II. And there's still a museum for their cars, but Chrysler can't keep theirs open for some reason.
They just going to throw everything in storage?
I don't know what they're going to do with the collection. But the building itself is becoming office space.
It just seems like a crime to me.
It does.
Yeah. Man.
One of the saddest things that I've ever read was the Corvette Museum. The sinkhole.
Oh, yes.
That was one of the saddest things I've ever... And the weird thing is my... Because I was in school, and one of my teachers told me... that's when I found out, and he said that he actually went to the Corvette Museum, 3 months earlier. And I was just like,
And I was sad when the Microcar Museum closed a few years ago. That was, what was the guy's name who owned it? I can't think of his name, but he was apparently heir to the double bubble bubblegum fortune. And it was out, it was east of Atlanta, out I-20. Where was it? I want to say Madison, but don't quote me on that.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, I got to go to it once. Went with a bunch of Lotus Club people because there was actually one car in the museum that Lotus contributed a bunch of engineering to. That's something they make a lot of money on doing over there in England. But what a fabulous place it was. All these Messerschmitts and, Autobianchis and Gogomobiles and things like that. All these strange little cars that you could park on this table. And plus, a lot of old vending machines and neon signs. And
does it still exist or do you need to
do? No, it closed, I believe, 3 years ago. The collection was auctioned off.
Oh, man.
And I know that at least one or two things from it are now in the Barber Motorsports Museum in Birmingham. But some heavy hitters came to buy stuff. I believe Jay Leno bought a couple of things. And, nothing went for cheap. They were really rare, BMW Isettas in there and things like that. Some really desirable stuff.
Yeah.
The Messerschmitts now fetch big money.
Oh, yeah. Mm. That here comes the inevitable pitch about museums and why museums are so important.
Yes.
Publicly accessible museums,
Yes.
Private collections are all well and good, but Ben and I have talked before about, or at least I've talked before about, pitching a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to try to produce a television show locally, what would a car show look like? What would you do if you were to put something up on TV? Something that people would actually watch?
That is a good question. I've never actually thought about that because I never thought about making a show before.
Right.
But really, the first thing that comes to mind is just a group of women working on restoration stuff.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I forgot that name of the show with all the women.
All Girls Garage.
Yes, yeah. That's.
I haven't seen that.
It's fun. On the one hand, they do really solid work. On the other hand, it's like a lot of these shows that do repair work is sort of a background to being a 30-minute commercial.
Oh, right.
So, I can't remember the name of those two other guys. It's not Garage Squad, but they have some contemporaries. They do sort of the same thing. It's a couple guys who are repairing a car, and while they're repairing that car, they've got to show you this new intake that they got from so-and-so. And by the way, here's this thing from Edelbrock. And by the way, here's this thing from... And it's just all product advertisements that just happen to fit into what's going on with the car. It's a great vehicle. I mean, no pun intended. It's a great way to talk about the car and to do some advertising. But the truth is that they're getting paid for everything that they mention. We're getting nothing. Not yet. But on the other hand, it is a cool show to watch. And I'm really impressed with All Girls Garage. I hope we get to meet them someday.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
That would be.
Well, the other idea I had was do teams, like two or three teams, and everybody gets to restore the same model of car.
Oh.
And so you have a period of time, say a month, and you have a camera crew following around each team as they work on the car for a month. And at the end of that time, maybe there's a judging event, or maybe the cars get sold, and whichever car fetches the best profit margin, they get declared the winner or something like that. And
that'd be cool.
The trouble is, it has such a long production schedule because you're not cranking out an episode every week, right? So we'd have to think about that. But I don't know. I play around with this idea from time to time. I'll probably, hopefully, find a way to pitch it to somebody someday. But
that sounds really interesting.
Well, right now I hope we can just keep the gang together and have fun doing these podcasts. because it turns out there's actually a lot of attention for it. As many car podcasts as there are in the world, mm-hmm. people don't seem to tune in, so to speak, right? There are at least a dozen other ones on the market. And the question that we've always wrestled with is, how do we not simply become the next Car Talk? You know,
yeah.
Hopefully we can answer that question and as we learn more about ourselves and the way we want to record things and keep people coming back to have fun with us. So what else should we talk about today?
Well, there's a tech tip that I was going to bring up. In fact, yeah, this dovetails into what I mentioned earlier when we were discussing what to discuss tonight. I've been seeing a guy on YouTube lately. He calls his channel B is for Build, and I'm not crazy about this modern trend of turning every project into a build, mm-hmm. making finger quotes here. That just sounds kind of asinine, but this is a guy who, cars aren't what he does for a living. He's just doing this for fun on the web. Mm-hmm. He's done several projects, but the only one I've seen is a Lotus Evora that he picked up. It had been rolled over and wrecked.
Huh.
And he's fixing it up. He's trying to see if he can do it for, like, the price of a Camry. If he can take a wrecked $80,000 supercar mm-hmm. and make it drivable and usable for average car money. And so far, he's succeeding. And the tech tip I got from him, and this is something I would never have... I'm just not good at putting two and two together sometimes, but he was taking pictures of damaged areas to fix later. And he was using his little GoPro, but you could use almost any camera to do this. And his tip was, don't just take pictures, take a video. Mm-hmm. Because you can move around and get different angles. You can add a little narration and comment and point with your finger at things in the frame. And you'll have a much better reference for when you put it all back together.
Mm-hmm. I see. So he's using the video as a reassembly guide.
Yeah, because digital photography was already a boon to tinkerers,
sure.
because you can so cheaply and easily document things as well as you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a little 30-second video might do you a lot more good than 20 or 30 still photos.
I'll have to remember that. I'm going to have to take apart the front end of the Mazda soon.
There you go.
It's one of those things where you have to remove the entire front bumper in order to change the light bulbs.
Ah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I can't believe Mazda did that to you.
Well, I mean, it doesn't help that I have hands that are, like, enormous, but...
They're ordinarily fairly easy cars to work on, and the only other person I know who has that exact problem is a guy who's got one of those old, what were they called? It was the little Jaguar that was based on a Ford Contour.
There was one of those?
What?
Yeah, there was a Jaguar a few years ago, and I can't think of the model name. This is when Ford owned Jag. The Ford Contour platform became the basis for a cute little Jag sedan. It was called the X. Well, everything's an X something with Jaguar, but a lot of people felt ripped off by this car. But he had a headlight bulb go, and he did all his homework and found out that there is no way to do it without removing the bumper.
I know with my truck, I have to take off the grill.
Wow.
Yeah, because for some reason they made it to where the sealed beams, plastic covering for them is not easy to get out through the grill. You have to actually take the grill off to be able to change it. That took me about 45 minutes.
Allegedly, doing the bumper thing on the Mazda is a one-hour job.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it's a matter of unscrewing like three or four things on top and three or four things on the bottom, and the whole thing slides off, and then you can get the lens out, and then you can just change your bulbs, and everybody's happy.
Well, now, here's a brain teaser for you. The Lotus Esprit that I used to own, to change a headlight bulb on it, well, it had sealed beams when I bought it. I converted it to an H1H7 setup.
Mm-hmm.
But to do anything with the headlights on that car, you had to disconnect power to the headlights to do the job. Can you figure out why?
Why was it always hot?
Well, because these were retractable headlights, 1980s style, and the thing was the motors are set up with position switches.
Right.
They center themselves on the exact proper position when they're down.
Yeah.
So, and there's a manual crank so you can raise, or a little knob on the back of the motor so that you can raise them if the mechanism breaks and you're out at night. But if they're up and the switch thinks they're down, they will go back down. So, yeah, you had to unplug the power to the motors before you manually cranked them
up. So they stayed up.
And you had to manually crank them up if you're going to change the bulb or something,
right.
because if you've got the lights actually on so that they're up, then you're just burning your battery, you know where that goes.
So this will tell you how old I am. I had this third-generation Honda Prelude that I loved. I loved that car.
Oh, yeah.
And it had the pop-up headlights. with a seal beam lens in there. Mm-hmm. But I replaced them out with a couple CBA lenses. I could put my own H4 bulb in there and do that obnoxious thing they used to do with putting a 100-watt bulb in where 55 watts should be. And I never did that because I always thought that was just stupid. But I did want to upgrade, you know, the setup there, so I did that. And now as I look at the market on eBay, for instance, I don't see those seal beam units. I don't see the CBA name as much as I used to. In fact, CBA and Marshall are names that are just gone for whatever reason. But they used to be like the names for off-road light applications. Does anybody, do you guys know anything? Did they get bought? Did they just go out of business? Or
not off the top of my head, but I do know that some brands have really come up in, you know, recent history. Like PIAA, they own the business now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're a decent light, but they're overpriced. But they've got a strong brand mechanism going on.
And LEDs are changing the market. Everything is going to LED now. So, and I'm not complaining about that, but I like the old-fashioned racing lights, you know, with an actual racing pattern on the wall and all that business that you don't see. Yeah.
Right.
But, I occasionally dream of trying to find another third-generation Prelude and restore it just because it was such a fun car to drive. You know, they referred to it as the poor man's Porsche.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it was the truth, absolutely the truth. Great little car.
They're out there.
They're out there.
Though I will say, if I ever was to get a small car, like a classic small car, it would be a Triumph Spitfire.
Yeah.
Because those things are fun to drive.
Yes,
and they take corners really well because they are so tiny. They just hug the corners. It's amazing.
That's what I'm looking forward to with my Lotus restoration project because, you know, I've owned it for coming up on a year now and I've only driven it an eighth of a mile. When I first got it running, I drove it up and down the street and that wasn't even that much fun because it's got 46-year-old rotten bushings in the suspension. So once all that gets replaced, you know, it will be one of the best handling cars of its era and beyond, but it's not there yet.
Well, I can't wait to see it get done. I know that the listening audience doesn't know that you just bought a house, which will...
Oh, yes.
With the garage, that will hopefully facilitate those...
Yeah, numbers. I'm really looking forward to taking advantage of that workspace. Yeah. I've got, you know, the drive-under basement garage, basically, and it's a lot of square footage down there, so I will have some space to get into it.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think that wraps up what we're going to cover for today, and I wanted to thank our listeners again for joining us for this next episode of The Thing About Cars. Please look for us again online wherever you get your podcasts and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thethingaboutcars. Coming to you again from Strongbox West, this really cool looking facility. I'm just going to sign off here and say goodbye and we'll see you guys soon. Check you later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.